This is The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. I'll ask the questions, and I'll let the book do the talking using words from its own pages. This is essentially a book interview. Your time is valuable, so let's get started. Today, I'll be interviewing God's Voice Within, The Ignatian Way to Discover God's Will by Mark E. Thibodeau. It currently has an overall rating of 4.7 on Amazon, and 84% of the reviewers call it a 5-star book. Question number one, what's the book about? In God's Voice Within, the author shows us how to access our own spiritual intuition and also understand that the most trustworthy wisdom of all comes not from outside sources, but from God working through us. All we need to do, besides having a good intention, is to rely on our God-given reason and also pay attention to the movements of our heart, which was also given to us by God. Question: how does a book on God's voice relate to my life and my everyday problems? This is a book on decision-making and living daily with consideration of God's voice within. A sign that a choice is right, or influenced by God working through us, is that doors open easily. We won't have to force our way in. We won't have to shove the doors open. God typically smooths the path and removes the obstacles when we're stepping in the right direction. Saint Ignatius describes this as the easing and taking away of obstacles, so that the person may go forward in doing good. True discernment, then, is not only a matter of reason, but also a matter of spirituality. You and I make hundreds of decisions on a daily basis, ordinary choices about ordinary things. These small, insignificant, daily choices may not have huge consequences, but they do define who you are as a person. In addition, you also have momentous choices that propel your life in irrevocable directions. For example, the choice to break up with someone or to marry them, the choice to stay in your hometown or to move to a distant city, the choice to pursue this career or that one. As we look back on the small and the momentous choices of our life, we see how crucial it is to choose well, and yet we don't always know how. Maybe God's voice within can help. Question. Okay, so let's get started. The book is based on the teachings of Saint Ignatius of Loyola. Who was he, and what is he best known for? Saint Ignatius of Loyola was a 16th century soldier turned mystic who founded the Catholic religious order known as the Jesuits. Sometimes called the world's first psychologist, Ignatius is one of Christianity's most important teachers of discernment. His way suggests that good decision-making is a combination of faith and reason. You trust your heart, but you use your head too. In essence, Ignatian discernment teaches how to fine-tune your spiritual senses so that you can more easily and readily detect the voice of God within. Question. To discern this voice of God from other voices, the book teaches us to always be vigilant of two inner states of being. What are these two inner states? To know God's voice, we must become aware of two inner voices, the true spirit and the false spirit, and the two states of being, consolation and desolation, which accompany these voices. We must be able to detect consolation and desolation by learning the characteristics of these two opposing states of being. Ignatius believed that if a person could simply discern between these two primary spirits within, the one pulling toward life and the other pulling away from life, then that person would be able to know God's will. He noticed that the pull toward God, the true spirit, has distinctive characteristics that reveal God. Conversely, the pull away from God, the false spirit, has distinctive characteristics as well. The more a person can detect these two spirits and
the accompanying states of being, the easier it is to recognize the true spirit and voice of God. Recognizing these voices is known as Ignatian intuition. It is defined as the internal ability to perceive the movements of the two spirits within. Question. So let's go deeper on that. How exactly do we identify these two spirits within us? And how do we know when we're in one or the other of these two opposing states of being? The false spirit is in control when we're in a state of desolation. I am in desolation when I am empty or low on the qualities of faith, hope, love, or when I lack a sense of God's being close to me. I am in desolation when I'm filled with disquiet or restlessness, deep below my surface emotions. I am in desolation when I feel a combination of agitation, boredom, apathy, fear or worry, or secrecy about the things in my life. Desolation is experienced when I'm in my false spirit. By contrast, the true spirit tends to be present when I'm in a state of consolation. I am in a state of consolation when I am filled with faith, hope, love, a sense of closeness with God. I am in consolation when I sense deep peace and tranquility below the surface emotions. I am in consolation when I feel great desires and I have a transparency with nothing to hide in my life. These are signs of my true spirit. It would be tempting to think of desolation as feeling bad and consolation as feeling good. These definitions are close to what a dictionary would give. But in Ignatian spirituality, desolation and consolation involve much more than feeling up or down, good or bad. These states are much deeper than surface feelings. Question. What exactly do you mean by much deeper than surface feelings? The difference is what you notice in the depths of your soul. Ignatius does not worry so much about, quote, many disturbances and temptations of the mind, end quote, but rather about disquiet deep within from these agitations and temptations of the mind. That is, Ignatius noticed an unsettled quality to desolation that is more than our surface emotions, and it signified the movements of this false spirit. A deeper inner disturbance, what Ignatius called disquiet, may well be the most revealing characteristic of the false spirit. In other words, there will always be surface emotions, agitations, negative feelings, temptations, and upsetting thoughts in every life. What the discerner needs to pay attention to is the extent to which these negative everyday movements within him disturb his deepest peace of mind. God's voice tends to be calm in the storm. Question. So this deep disquiet of the soul is a key feature of desolation, and in the book, you say that desolation is a dangerous time to plan or think or act. Why? Because we must act carefully when in desolation. According to Saint Ignatius, this is a tricky time when it's easy to make mistakes. In desolation, often the person will do something, anything, to get out of this discomfort. She may incorrectly conclude that some previous decision was wrong and so attempt to reverse that decision. Or she may think that she must do something different in order to get out of the funk. The problem is that a person loses objectivity when in desolation and under the spell of the false spirit. Agitation, fear, and confusion lead the person to focus on changes that are at best unnecessary and at worst disastrous. Sadness, fear, boredom, apathy, or confusion they all begin to wear on the desolate person, and she begins to think and reason poorly. Conclusions she would never come to during a state of consolation suddenly appear to be the best, perhaps even the only, option.
Question. Speaking of our options in desolation, Ignatius has a strategy called agere contra, which in Latin means to do the opposite. Can you explain? Agere contra literally means to act against, the choice to do the opposite of what I am tempted to do in desolation. If I want to change something, I avoid making changes or important decisions. Instead, I choose to wait it out. If I feel inclined to stay in my room and sulk all day, I will choose the opposite path by stepping out of the house and socializing with people. If I feel like skipping exercise, I may go for a walk or a jog. If I don't feel like going to church, I will go to church. If I feel like eating comfort food, I will choose to eat healthy food. And because feeling distant from God is one of the central characteristics of desolation, prayer can be an arduous task in this state of mind. If my daily practice is to pray for 30 minutes, I may find myself leaving prayer after 20 or 25 minutes. To do the opposite, I might want to add a few minutes to the end of my usual 30-minute prayer ritual. Question. While we're on the subject of how to deal with the false spirit, in the book, you list 4 strategies of what to do in a state of desolation. What are they? First, since desolation inclines me to judge myself harshly, I practice agere contra by speaking kindly to myself. For example, I'm doing okay. I'm gonna get through this. It isn't as bad as it feels right now. God loves me, and I love myself. I say the things a good mother would say to a wounded child. Second, I remind myself that desolation rarely lasts very long. Always think that you will soon be consoled, says Ignatius. Holding on to that hope will help move the process along. Even Job, the icon of the faithful, desolate man, spent less than 1% of his entire life in desolation. The rest of his life, both before and after desolation, was joyous and enriching. Third, remember that desolation is normally not the time for bold moves. Instead, if possible, I sit quietly and patiently, actively waiting for God to make the next move and believing that He will. My own novice master once said, "If you're traveling on a horse through the desert and a sandstorm kicks up, get off your horse, lie face down on the ground, and wait it out. If at all possible, do nothing." Fourth and finally, I remind myself that God is all-loving and all-powerful and will not send me any challenges that I can't handle. If that's true, then I can live through this challenge too, and I'll even trust God that I will make good use of it. Desolation is an opportunity to receive the graces that can only come through suffering.
Question. Let's shift gears and discuss times when we're not suffering. In a state of consolation, we feel more faith, hope, love, and closeness to God. We feel a deep inner peace. Is this the state when we should search for God's voice within? Yes. When we're in a state of consolation, it's the time to pray and contemplate and search our hearts for God's voice. If Saint Ignatius was correct in saying that I should not make a decision when in desolation, then it follows that I should discern and act only during a time of consolation. This, then, is the time to decide what exactly God is calling me to do at a particular juncture in my life. Every day, each one of us makes multiple decisions. Many of them are not well reasoned, but are simply what we perceive to be the most comfortable path. Of course, many aren't decisions at all, but are avoidance of a decision until circumstances force one outcome or another. Some decisions are the product of careful consideration and deliberation, but few, very few, come out of a process of prayerful discernment. Consolation is a time when we can discern with God most effectively. Question. And in the book, you state that before making a decision prayerfully, we need to lay a foundation for our process. What does this mean exactly? St. Ignatius teaches us to begin with a first principle, a foundation for big decisions. It's a statement, not unlike a mission statement, that answers the big questions about the purpose of my life and the purpose of this decision. Ignatius, for example, chose his own first principle and foundation to be the following. Man is created to praise, reverence, and serve God our Lord, and by this means to save his soul. Your foundation may be different. You may want to choose a path that increases your faith, hope, love, and closeness to God. Maybe your greater vision is to achieve freedom, or a purpose, or a specific goal. When you start with a clear mission, it will help to guide your decision, but you must first know exactly what you seek. Question. So once we have this foundation for a prayerful decision, next comes what you call Ignatian indifference. What is meant by this term, and why does it matter? Ignatian indifference is the grace-filled state of desiring to do God's will more than desiring anything else. It is the state of grateful availability. Paradoxically, in any given moment of discernment, I may not have feelings of indifference, but I can willfully choose the path of indifference. If I'm indifferent in this Ignatian sense, I care so much about serving God in a quite definite way that I'm willing and ready to take on anything or give up anything for a cause. It is in this way that I get past my ego and make an indifferent choice. By contrast, if I set out to make a decision without indifference, then I'll unconsciously be steering my discernment toward the option that I want most. To be indifferent, I am open to other possibilities. I can follow any perceived path. Question. Besides being open to any path, you list four phases that a typical discernment of God's voice within tends to follow. What's the first phase? Phase one is to get quiet. The modern world, for all its marvels, is simply too noisy for our own good. We can't think straight with a cacophony of competing values presented by advertisements, the media, politicians, and the people around us. In order to hear the sound of God's voice, we must turn down the sound of the world. We must come to a place of stillness within by separating ourselves from the noisy outside. Even for an experienced discerner, the movements of the spirits are simply too subtle to detect without quieting down and being still every day. All that matters is that a person prays a little every day in order to grow closer to God. We can't know God's will in our decisions unless we ask and listen. Question. What is phase two of discerning God's voice within? Phase two is gathering data. Our sense of God's will can change, expand, adapt, or be confirmed with more information about our choices. This, then, is a good time to roll up my sleeves and do a bit of solid research. For each of my options, I should gather as much information as I possibly can. I will visit relevant people and places. I'll Google one topic and then another. I'll speak to experts. I'll ask questions, lots and lots of questions. So many times in life, we begin with the naive assumption that we only have options A and B. We choose one of these two without ever stopping to think that there might be an option C and D, and maybe even options all the way up to Q. Don't leave this line of questioning until you've come up with 1,000 new ideas, 90% of which are extreme and unworkable. Then take that one workable solution, the one you previously not thought of, and bring it to the decision-making process. Question. At this point in the book, you make the distinction between a hasty decision maker and a hesitant decision maker. Can you explain the challenges of each? A hasty decision maker is someone who tends to jump too quickly into a decision, someone who makes a decision without thoroughly discerning. A hesitant decision maker, on the other hand, is someone who drags his or her feet in making a decision, usually because the decision requires an uncomfortable choice. Important decisions are hard to make and involve an inner tension that begs to be resolved. I am tempted, then, to do one of two things with my decision. I may be tempted to jump too fast, to resolve the tension by making a quick and rash choice and be done with it. Or I may be tempted to not jump at all, to pretend to be working on the decision, all the while hoping that it will resolve itself. It may indeed resolve itself, but not necessarily in the way God wills. Perhaps a part of a hesitant person's decision is having to choose one great choice at the expense of all other great choices. Generation Xers, in particular, seem to struggle with committing to one thing if it means having to say no to others. Question. So for the person who is committed to deciding, and by that I mean choosing between options, what's the third phase of discerning God's voice within? Phase three is to dream about your options in your imagination and tap into your deepest desires. In fact, Ignatius held the radical notion that God dwells within our deepest desires. He believed that deep desires are one of God's primary instruments of communicating to us. In other words, God gave us our desires. How then do we tap into these great desires? Begin by asking the big question. What is the purpose of my life? Remind yourself of your foundation to guide your thoughts during this discernment process. You'll then dream of each option. I personally allow myself to fantasize about great and beautiful futures. I spend as much time as I need with option A until it feels right to move on. I then start all over again and dream about option B, and then I do the same with option C, and so on. Question. So let me get this straight. So far, we became quiet, gathered data, expanded our options through possibility thinking, and engaged in a kind of thought experiment by imagining these scenarios going forward. It all seems like basic decision making and problem solving. Where is God's voice in this process? God's voice is essentially in phase four, which is to ponder the dreams while I deliberately ask questions to evaluate my sense of desolation or consolation in each choice. In other words, as I daydream, or better yet, pray dream, the possibilities of living out my great desires in each option, I try to note the differences in my heart. For example, which dreams leave me in consolation? And by that I mean, which of these dreams leave me filled with wholesome desires? Which leave me with a sense of closeness to God? Which leave me filled with faith, with hope, with love, with good energy? Which dreams leave me with a deep down peace and tranquility, with a sense of rightness, with a fits like a glove sort of feeling? On the other hand, I evaluate which dreams leave me in a state of desolation. That is, which of my options leave me without faith, with less hope, with less love in the future? Which of my dreams leave me without a sense of closeness to God as I envision the future going forward? Which of my dreams leave me with a state of disquiet deep in my soul, like something's not quite right? Which leave me with no passion, no zeal, with a sense of boredom, apathy, a lack of energy? Do any of my dreams leave me feeling deflated, like they're not my dream? Pondering these questions while contemplating my future is the very heart of Ignatian discernment. This moment in my discernment process is the very essence of the discernment of spirits. It is the sun around which orbit all other insights. Question. In the book, you emphasize searching for deeper feelings of inner peace versus disquiet in these prey dreams. Can you give an example of this peace versus disquiet that lies below the surface of human emotions in real life? Just a few years into my tenure as a teacher and pastoral minister, I received a phone call from one of my superiors asking if I felt ready to leave Houston and move on to my next assignment. It was the call I knew was coming, yet dreaded nonetheless. My years in this particular ministry had been among the best of my life. My relationship with the students was strong, healthy, mutually nourishing. I loved teaching more with each passing year. I found my priesthood thriving as I ministered to the wider community. I had close friendships and a loving community of brother Jesuits whom I lived with and loved. Why on earth would I want to leave this grace-filled moment? Why on earth would I want to move on from this place? Prey dreaming about staying in Houston several more years left me feeling comfortable, safe, and loved. These were surface emotions. But deeper down, despite my hesitance to lose this blessed life, I felt an itch, a disquiet. Despite my fears of the unknown, I felt a pull to say yes to whatever it was God had in store for me next. When I pray-dreamed about leaving Houston and taking on this or that assignment in this or that city, I felt a pang of saying goodbye to the place I called home. I felt the discomfort of moving from something I had learned to do well to moving to work I knew nothing about. I felt nervous about being in a new place with no friends and no familiar surroundings. But deeper down, there was a sense of peace and rightness. Deeper down, I felt a stronger presence of the creative energy of the Creator working with, in, and through me. Owing to these deeper dynamics of peace versus agitation, I was able to answer my superiors, "Yes, I'm ready to leave." Question. So do you believe then that this peace versus disquiet deep in the soul, far below the surface emotions, is actually God's voice within, leading you to the right path? Yes, I do. And this is the pinnacle of my discernment. If I have faithfully journeyed through my discernment process, there will come a moment when peace and the life-giving energy of possibility will accompany one of these options. At this point, I will usually sense a transcendent peace and tranquility and an undeniable yes that pulses through my veins every time I imagine myself going with one particular option over the others. I believe this feeling of peace and tranquility is telling me something, and it is the deeper desire than the stress I may feel in my mind. It is the voice I feel in my heart. The questions that I asked myself in this discernment was, where is the energy? Where is the deepest desire? What do I feel deep inside? In this particular case, while I had considerable passionate desire for vocational work in the past, I presently was not sensing that same energy as I went through a prayerful discernment to seek God's voice within. Question. But you also acknowledge that trying to discern God's voice can be tricky, and we can make mistakes. So you offer a list of considerations to confirm or disconfirm God's voice in the choices with big consequences. Can you share some of these considerations? I always test my final decision with criteria. As I imagine, as best I can, the consequences of having made my decision, I consider it in the perspective of whether the choice stirs feelings of 1, consolation, or 2, desolation. For example, imagine you made a serious choice in your life, but then you'll ponder these statements to see how they land with you. 1. I feel a little nervous, but deep down, I'm at peace. Or 2. I feel fearful, anxious, unsettled, or disquiet deep down about this option. 1. I know I don't have all the answers yet, but I'm confident that God will lead me step by step. Despite my lack of certainty, I feel as though I'm walking in the right direction, doing the right thing. Or 2. I'm feeling agitated and confused. I feel fretful about the future. I feel like I'm groping in the dark, without a sense of confidence. 1. I feel God very near to me in this choice. Or 2. While my choice feels rational, I don't feel God's presence at all as I imagine this path going forward. The list of questions goes on and on, and they serve as a final checkpoint to guard against the voice of the false spirit. In the end, what matters is not so much what happens in the exterior, but what interior movements are stirred in the midst of making these choices that lead to all of these other exterior circumstances. This phase of post-discernment, then, is a form of prayerful lab testing. Question. So in the end, will this process of discerning God's voice within ultimately lead to a feeling of certainty that we can trust in our life for our future decision-making? God never promises absolute certainty. Sometimes I'll have it, but often I won't. Often, I'll simply have to make my choice, not knowing for sure that it is the better choice, but trusting that God knows my heart and will bless me for the attempt to do His will, even if I accidentally miss the mark. The following prayer from the mystic Thomas Merton has been a source of consolation for many who struggle with having no certainty. My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. I don't see the road ahead of me. I can't know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself, and the fact that I think that I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does please you, in fact, and I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may not know anything about it. Therefore, I will trust you always, though I may seem lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. Question. Maybe that's a good place to wrap up this book interview. Do you have any final thoughts for the person who wants to include God in decisions? Many of us tend to believe that in every decision there is a right choice and several wrong alternatives, and that discernment is about figuring out which choice is the correct one. In cases which have moral implications, a little girl discerning whether or not to shove her little sister in the mud, for example, that assumption is correct. But in cases without serious moral implications, such as choosing to attend one university over another, it may very well be that there is more than one correct choice, and that God is ready to bless my life regardless of my choice. St. Ignatius calls this situation choosing between goods. The fact that there may be more than one correct choice should relieve me on the days when I'm intimidated by the decision I'm called upon to make. Instead of presuming that there's one right choice and several wrong ones, perhaps I should presume that God is sending me several invitations to do one thing or another. And finally, my favorite quotes from the book are as follows. If a person can simply discern between two spirits, then that person could know God's will. I am in consolation when I have faith, hope, love, a sense of closeness with God, peace and tranquility, I am in desolation, when I am empty of faith, hope, love, when I lack a sense of God's being close to me, and when I am filled with a sense of disquiet. I should discern and act only during a time of consolation. Desolation is normally not a time for bold moves. Inner restlessness, what Ignatius calls disquiet, is the most revealing characteristic of the false spirit. Our deepest desires are one of God's primary instruments of communicating to us. To hear the sound of God's voice, we must turn down the sound of the world. I allow myself to dream crazy dreams, and I note the differences in my heart. Pondering key questions while daydreaming is at the heart of Ignatius' discernment. And that's it for this book interview with God's Voice Within by Mark E. Thibodeau. You've been listening to The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. You can order this book in the links below or on our website if you'd like to support our cause. It puts a few pennies in our pockets without taking any extra pennies from yours. As always, thank you for your time.